All right, let's head over to the Zoom line where we've got Clint Kling from VR Shepherd. It's that nice Shepherd dog logo with the futuristic looking Googles on or whatever those are, the iPhone VR headset, which we'll get to in just a second here. But I've seen a lot of news lately about virtual reality when it comes to training. And it really caught my attention because I remember when the oil and gas industry specifically ushered in the simulators, especially when it came to fires and emergency management, because this allowed employees to experience kind of a real life situation without putting themselves in real danger. So it allowed some actual fight or flight type of response, et cetera. So I see where Toyota of North America is now bringing in virtual reality training for machine risk assessment, which I found very interesting. And so we wanted to bring in Clint Kling to talk about virtual reality training. He's done a number of different programs as well as worked with the state of South Dakota through the university system and others. So how are you doing today?
Good, Jason. Thanks for having me.
Well, let's talk about what's going about. Boy, look, there's my northern roots. Let's talk about how Toyota specifically is bringing in kind of a virtual reality training culture now. It looked like down in the factory floor, huh?
Yeah, it appears that they have some sort of virtual reality risk assessment for a machine of theirs. Robotic type factory, I guess, on the factory floor, which is pretty ideal, I guess, for the VR simulations or VR training.
Well, to me, what it reminded me of when I was looking at some of the different stills and some of the different screenshots and the description, it did remind me of the simulators that kind of ushered in the oil and gas industry through some of the emergency training about spills and blasts and et cetera. What would be the difference between like a simulator and like a virtual reality training experience? Are they the same or is there some differences?
Well, definitely some differences, but there's some similarities to them where they're, you know, trying to project, you know, different scenarios on a, you know, a 2D screen, which would be mostly like your simulators, and the 3D environment, which is a virtual reality experience, definitely come with their different experiences for the user, which one of the benefits, I guess, with the VR is having kind of that more in-depth like experience, engaging, you know, the surroundings, where you actually feel like you're in that environment, where 2D sometimes on a flat screen, you can still get a lot of good training off of that. But at the same time, you're not really immersed in it, per se.
That's what this reminded me of, the next level of that simulator type of a thing, because now it's more of a simulation role play almost, where you're adding that different elements. And I understand simulators had that to a certain degree, but it's the next level. You're seeing it now in corporations like Toyota. They're bringing it to the factory floor. I saw where there's several police departments from different parts of the country. They're bringing in virtual reality training too. And that one really caught my eye, because when you have corporate America and the government starting to bring in some of this virtual reality training, it's not long before it's just going to take off. What's going on here? Why are so many of these organizations looking to this virtual reality training? Is it that effective?
Well, it's definitely got its benefits as far as being effective training. We can get to that in a minute. I mean, a lot of my university research was based on, you know, assessing effectiveness in training, just because, you know, everybody said VR was better and nobody really had any hard data. And I spent a year and a half or so setting up experiments and running them, and basically showcasing what is effective training as far as VR goes, what's effective training as far as our traditional methods go. And so VR definitely has leaps and bounds on the effectiveness of the training. But the catch is that VR, you can't train everything in VR. So like what the police academies are doing, that's fantastic. We can get that in a minute, that they're doing a lot of scenario-based training, which is exactly what you need, which you can happen or have happened in VR. This Toyota factory, they're actually mimicking some sort of machine that they have on the floor. And that's really cost effective to companies in the long run if you're looking at it in that way, because a lot of times if you're going to train a new employee on a piece of equipment, then you're going to have to slow down production or shut down production to train that employee, where now they're getting that in a virtual reality system that it's exactly like the real thing. And some of my research, what I've seen was that your brain doesn't know what's the difference between virtual and actual reality. So again, like I mentioned before, that it's really important to know that, and that if you're developing these kind of systems, you need to put in the most relevant and most accurate information, because with the effectiveness of this training, it's gonna retain a lot longer to the end user.
You primarily work in the mining industry, or have primarily worked in the mining industry in the past with your VR training and university projects and stuff. How realistic looking is it? Is it like Minecraft, or is it like, a BBC documentary on the ocean?
Well, it depends a lot on the systems that you're working with. So there's I have a couple different systems that I have. One that I run off of a computer that generates all the the graphics and stuff like that. And so that those tend to be a lot higher quality type of images, where there's some standalone headsets out there that are kind of dependent on the hardware that's inside of those. But what's happened is in the last, I'd say, I don't know, now it's been probably 8 years, that this hardware technology has been getting better to where you're getting standalone headsets, and that people are able to afford them, and being able to display graphics that don't make you sick. One thing is consideration in development is cyber sickness, and because I'll just touch on that for a minute for
No,
your list that are interested
I
in
don't
this.
like it. I get it. I don't. Yeah, I get it, because it's like my body knows it's not real.
Well, there's that, and it's like, well, you ever been motion sickness? And it's like, that's what happens in
Yes.
cyber sickness, is basically like motion sickness. And if you get a bad experience in VR, you're not gonna go in it again. You're not gonna train in it again. And so, that's one element that I've seen in early on, development and stuff like that, where that wasn't really considered. And if you're training a ton of people, and they're getting sick off of because you have slow frame rates and things like that, and that's not a very effective training, because now you just basically ruined it for those people.
Well, sure, but I mean, that I think would be a different for training than, somebody just advertising walking over a plank at the mall type of a VR set. That's what I think people are quite accustomed to. When you put on some kind of training, my guess is that it kind of walks you into it rather than starts out with the scare tactic to make sure it's like, okay, because that's kind of the trick with a lot of the VR. You got to make it very extreme out of the gate, to catch people's attention, where a lot of these other ones, you know, they kind of work into it. You've got a regular kind of entry level for customers and that sort of thing, but you also do custom, correct?
Correct. Yeah.
Yeah. How does that work? Cause like, you know, we're talking about where, you know, you primarily have this mining VR training background, but I'm starting to see how, you know, municipalities are using it. So is that something that you could venture into? Do you do that type of stuff, or do you just exclusively do mining?
No, it's not exclusive to mining. I started out in mining. My background's in mining engineering, oil and gas. So that's kind of what made sense to me when I started this venture is, you know, being in those industries, knowing, you know, how dangerous it is. And then there's all this mandatory training a lot of times with MSHA and OSHA. And so while it's like, well, you know, we still have injury rates and we still have people coming home, you know, injured on the job and, you know, the unfortunate events of fatalities that happen occasionally. And it's like, well, why is that? And so that's kind of the premises of just starting, you know, this venture of research and trying to understand like what's happening. Can we do better? And, you know, will we do better is probably the question now, because the research is out, it's proven, it's, you know, in certain scenarios, it's more effective, absolutely, and cost effective as well, due to all sorts of reasons. But if you want to just look at injuries, then you're saving by preventing, you know, even a sprained ankle, if you can, you know, get that to relay to somebody, you know, from the training, not to do something, which I've had some feedback on that out of the people I've trained, which is really nice to hear. You know, they didn't do something because they remembered their training. They remembered like that wasn't a, you know, a good situation that they were in. So
Do you need much space for this, or what, how much space do you need?
Well, typically it kind of depends like on the one environment that I have. I prefer more of a kind of a free roam, or kind of make it feel like you're able to move. And so that requires not a lot of space. I usually set up like a, you know, even like a 6x6 space, you know, where people can kind of just be able to freely move around.
Well, that's not much space, but I get it. Yeah. So
it's not.
But that would be considered enough space. Because I'm thinking, you know, like a conference room or something like that, you know, is what I've been thinking. But
yeah, I usually set up trainings like in hallways or anything like that, where you kind of set the boundaries, so then the headset itself knows where it's at.
And what we're talking about is putting goggles on, right? Headset goggles, like what you see with the, you know, the new eye thing, and what was the Oculus was the other one that was out, and
I know
Google had one too.
Yeah. Apple just came out with a new one.
That's the one. Yeah. That's popular right now.
Yeah. Yep. That one's
popular. People drive with their cars with that on. Is that a thing, or is that just,
well, I guess
social media?
Yeah. I haven't had a chance to try those, but you know, if it's augmented reality where you're mixing, you know, reality and the virtual, you know, 3D environments, then I guess that would be possible. I'm not sure why you would do that, but
well, maybe. It seems a little bizarre that, you know, you can get pulled over for having a, you know, some sort of air freshener hanging from your car, but Tony Stark can drive down the street, you know, I mean, with the Iron Man mask on. So anyway, that's not what you do, but so, you know, what's going on in the virtual reality space then? Is our companies starting to, you know, be open to this? I imagine that, you know, you're on what would be considered a ground floor for something like this, because this is a relatively new training style, isn't it?
Relatively new. The adoption rate on this stuff it's kind of typical, where you have, let's see, like 7% of people, in the companies or industries that are early adopters of this technology. They're really seeing the benefits or can see the benefits, and they're some of them are just, I like new technology, I'm gonna just try it. And so we're kind of getting out of that phase, I feel like, and now we're kind of not quite to a standard yet, but it hasn't gone away, and it's been a $1 billion industry in the more so in the gaming and stuff world, with the metaverse and just new things coming out, where it's really, kind of taken off. And so the knowabouts is getting better. And I think, as companies and military was a pretty early adopter of this stuff, and they've had some good studies with them being able to, simulate kind of what Toyota did, a piece of equipment, and being able to, have them set all these parts up. Like if it's 300 pieces to set up, and they can just train in that, and they don't have to risk damaging the equipment, or they don't have to be dependent on the weather. They can even set the weather conditions in VR. So, they get all this, good, really good, authentic training before they even have to go out in the field to do this stuff. And so, I mean, I think case studies like that, and just kind of the kind of the culture of like the gaming world of bringing it more, more to the front too. Seeing things on social media, like people driving down the road, I guess, with a headset on. Like, I'm not, yeah, I mean, that catch people's attention for sure. Kind of asking questions. And then, if you're really proactive in your safety training and trying to keep your employees, safe and up to date on things, I mean, you really probably should be looking into some of this stuff for certain aspects of your safety training.
Well, how does that work then? So if, I mean, I imagine HR, human resources, would be who would be somebody that would reach out. I mean, obviously a CEO or something like that, but they book, and then do they come back, and is it a quarterly, monthly? I mean, is it that type of training? Is it a class, or walk me through just real quick how that works.
Sure. Yeah. A lot of times I work with like the safety managers or safety
Oh,
professionals
sure. Yeah.
at companies.
I
Is there?
suppose everybody's got compliance now. Yeah. Okay.
Well, yeah, they're kind of the ones involved with getting, the training to their employees or contractors or whatever they're in the train. But yeah, a lot of times, they'll, kind of just set up like a day to do it, where they kind of have a scheduled time. A lot of times, sometimes, it'll be like in those mandatory training days that they have already set up. So you kind of just block out the hour for, running, 20, 30 people through their training or the VR training at that time. Other times it's good, it's kind of a pick and choose, what works for the employee. They can sign up for a day, or not a day, but a half hour on a certain day, just to come in and do it. And with the VR stuff, what I've noticed, is that, the retention, and that's most of, my research results was based on retention and the forgetting curve of information. You really don't have to train too often in VR compared to if you're going to do a traditional type training like book and paper or PowerPoint even. That retraining should be much more frequent, which isn't really effective for companies either, because training's usually once a year a lot of times. And sometimes with, depending on how you set your VR design up for the end user, which we can get into that too. But That's really important to retain or get that information retained long term for the end user.
Well, it would seem, that next level of training on demand. I mean, because you can really, with this type of platform, you can really set it up so that, I mean, and you mentioned oil and gas, and oil and gas is a 24/7 industry. And so some people train at different times. So I can imagine where something like this would be that next level, because checking out, some of those news stories about Toyota and the emergency management and sheriff stations using it, they all mentioned weather, that one of the benefits is that you're not impacted by weather. And that really says a lot, because you're in control of so much if you don't have to worry about weather. I mean, that's kind of a big deal. So, what, if how does that work then? Do they, you mentioned the end user type of a thing. My guess is that, if somebody's doing this, especially on a custom, you're trying to give them as much shelf life as possible so they can go back and retrain and re-educate and that sort of thing. I imagine there's updating too that happens.
Yeah, there's definitely a benefit that way too, if you want to, you set like a base module for a certain training that you're doing. And let's just say in a year from the beginning of that training, you decide like, well, there's a better protocol out there, or if there's maybe a an extra component we want to put in there. That's all doable, and it's able, you're able to kind of update those, along the way, I guess, or it kind of adapts, so you're not necessarily, fixed to the original product, which is nice. And, talk about the custom stuff. I mean, if you imagine if you were like, on an oil rig, right, and you're going out there, and you need on-site training. How nice would it be for the safety guy to already have a VR system set up in his office, where it's 50 to below, outside, which I've experienced a lot of times in North Dakota in the winter, on a rig. How effective is your training to do an on-site then? I mean, would you even go do an on-site, or would you wait? Or if you did do the on-site, are you getting the points across that you need to, or are you too worried about, freezing your fingers off? And so if you had the VR system inside a warm office, you could just go through the on-site through the VR system and have a much more effective training session.
I would imagine. And, and there's other elements too. I'd like to have you back and talk about some of the other training parts that aren't necessarily about, safety as much as they are just about training itself. I mean, we're, just some, well, in some of the police things, there was a paragraph or two about de-escalation, and I thought, oh my goodness. Now, when we live in this world of, cancel culture and he, she, hims and all these different rules and regulation from the word police, man, that's a whole new training element that, is gonna happen, where people are gonna have to go through training programs on how to speak properly in a corporate structure if they're doing it in the police area with de-escalation. And actually, with police, that's really good to go through de-escalation, training and that sort of thing. But like I said, we'll have you back and we'll talk about some of those, different, whether it's emotional training or energy training, in human energy training. But that is a whole different vein that I think is really interesting, and I think a lot of people will find that interesting too. But
For sure.
getting back to the mining side and just the emergency management side, and The Toyota with the factory side, which is more of a safety injury type of a element. Are there, reports coming back that's showing that the VR training is working? There must be, if you're starting to see corporations adopt it, and states and counties and emergency services adopt it, they must be finding out that this virtual reality training is working.
I think the obvious, just going through the training once, you could say that, yeah, it's more effective. But to what element or what degree, would be another question. And I'm always skeptical about, reports that come out when I read on companies' websites saying they're, it's 200% better in such way. And being in the research world, it takes a lot to set up experiments, run them, and do it in a repeated way where you're getting consistent results to actually claim something like that. So I'm always skeptical on those percentages and case studies. There's been some done by Ford and Walmart and other cases like that, and I'm sure they're saying, it's better, but their percentage wise, I'm not saying it's, I would say, it's accurate in a way that, we would say it's accurate in academia, but nonetheless, it's effective training for sure.
You mentioned doing some work with the oil and gas industry, the mining industry. What are just some examples of some virtual reality training that, somebody might engage with, for example? Like what does it look like? If, I mean, don't give us the, the Lord of the Rings 6-volume version of it, kind of a, just paint a picture a little bit about what some of your clients have seen and done and how it's benefited them.
A big thing in the mining, oil and gas has been hazard recognition, and so that's a really good use case. We talk about, what qualifies as a good case for VR, and if you're going to spend, the money to develop something, you want to make sure you're getting, the right thing and the most bang for your buck. So, hazard identification definitely qualifies. And
I mean, you're talking like OSHA, right? There, that type of stuff, like the different, just the basics, even, what the different symbols and just things like that are we talking about?
I mean, there could be that. I would say more like site specific, or like what I do is, I don't necessarily train, for every hazard out there, because that's impossible. What I try to do, and how I develop, my VRs, is that I'm looking at changing behavior of the end user to help them become safer. So there's a whole psychology, thing behind why, we see certain things. There's certain things we look for, and some of it's, just a behavioral thing that we've learned, and we're trying to, teach the right things essentially. So when people are on site and even off site, even that they're, asking the right questions, and they're, paying attention to things that, maybe they didn't notice before.
Well, how can somebody get in touch with you? What type of information? I guess you've got a website, so obviously you like people to go to the website, shepherd.fit. Now, what's fit.fit?
So fit is a functional integral training. It's a term I've coined after my research that I've developed, a functional integral training. So I'm taking training that's functional, I'm integrating parts of psychology and neuroscience and the vision system to infuse that into VR for a better training. And so, Fit just naturally comes at the end of shepherd.fit, and you can find it there. You can reach out through the website. If you have any questions, I'd be happy to answer them.